second about your first cell phone. It's very likely you picked up your first cell phone in the mid or late 1990s. That was just 15 years ago, and now digital natives have never known a world without them. But the confluence of technology and sexual awakening in young children and teens has resulted in some confusing situations for youth, using texts, Snapchat, Tumblr, Facebook, Twitter, to become victims or perpetuators of sexual exploitation, some cases resulting in prosecution, and even resulting in youth becoming registered sex offenders before they graduate high school. Good morning, I'm Suzanne Hogan. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Later in the hour, a look inside the dirty job of your local chimney sweep. But first, we're talking about youth sexting. That is, those under the age of 18 engaging in sexually explicit messaging. We'll discuss the consequences and educational resources available for parents and youth. We're joined in the studio by Haley Harold, Education and Outreach Specialist for MOXA, Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. Good morning, Haley.
Good morning.
And Officer Tom Hazelton, a school resource officer for Shawnee Mission School District. Good morning, Officer Hazelton.
Good morning.
So we know that sexting is growing amongst youth, but it's hard to find concrete numbers of exactly how much. And I'm wondering, why is that?
Yeah, I think that the reason that it's hard to find concrete numbers is because the landscape is changing very quickly. You mentioned Snapchat. That's like a picture text messaging app for your phone. And kids are using that. They're using it to send pictures to each other. And they're also using it for sexting because you can make pictures disappear pretty quickly. So that's pretty new. I've only known about it for, 3 or 4 months. So I think that that's one of the reasons that it's hard to find concrete numbers is because it's changing so quickly. And also because, we're asking kids to report things that they're doing.
And it's that kids that are reporting that makes this where the numbers are always going to kind of skew and be different depending on which website that you go to.
Why is that?
Well, kids are not necessarily so forthcoming with information that is what they're doing. They know is wrong. Texting, sexting, they're not necessarily even on what they believe to be an untraceable survey. They're still going to maybe put something what they think their parents would want them to put instead of what is really happening.
So this problem didn't even exist at the rate that it does now, even just 10 years ago. How in your line of work are you seeing educational institutions kind of adapt to address this issue, from the start?
Well, when you look at schools, they develop policies involving the use of cell phones during the educational period. The problem that comes into hand is once they leave the school, all these friendships and relationships they've developed while at the school, obviously the friends they've met while they were there, that's who they're calling. That's who they're texting when they get off.
Yeah, another thing that their schools are doing is they're having MOXA presenters come and talk to their students about sexual harassment and about media safety. And every time I give a presentation, the teacher or the counselor, whoever is in the room, really says, okay, hey, if you weren't listening before, make sure you're listening now because this is important.
So let's talk about what the two of you do with youth. Haley, let's start with you with MOXA.
Yeah, I go into schools throughout the metropolitan area. MOXA is in 30 school districts, and we go to 300 schools. Last year, we saw 50,000 students. So we go into schools and we talk to students about sexual harassment and media safety. That's typically when we bring up sexting. But sometimes it even comes up when we're talking about sexual assault or healthy relationships or dating violence. So while we're there, we present the information to students and we also give them a chance to tell us what's been going on in their school, what they've seen, and how it's affecting them.
Are these type of sessions mandatory for all students, or is it something that, they can choose to go to?
Yeah, it happens during their school day, so in that way it's mandatory. And it's kind of, different people who are bringing us in. Sometimes it's a health teacher, sometimes it's a PE teacher, sometimes it's the counselor, and we see, the whole school or all of the seventh grade. So it's different everywhere that we go.
Officer Hazelton, how are you involved in this within our school district?
Well, law enforcement kind of takes a holistic approach to it, especially the Shawnee Police Department. We look at kind of a team effort. Every detective that does an investigation involving kids, they also take that time to educate. Not everything necessarily negates somebody going to jail right away. So the SROs at the Shawnee Police Department work really well with the school administrators. When they bring in guest speakers like Moxa, we support them. We want to help them out. We'll go into the classroom with them, instruct right along with them, support their views. And our views obviously are going to be identical because it's all about protecting kids.
But do you spend the school day – you spend the school day at Shawnee Mission Schools. That's where you work?
I don't at Shawnee Mission. We do have officers at Shawnee Mission. I'm with the DeSoto School District.
Okay.
And I work at Monticello Trails Middle School. And, I spend the time with the kids. After Haley came and did her presentation at our middle school, sure enough, at lunch, that's when questions come up about all the little different intricacies that they didn't feel comfortable necessarily.
And, yeah, what are some of those things that kids bring up?
Well, of course, the kids are going to start off with the little jokes about, you know, hey, is it okay if I take a picture of myself when I get out of the shower or something like that? Is it, you know, they'll try to prod at me at first, but then you get to the more serious ones of what if I did this now? Is this when you talk about the criminal ramifications of taking an inappropriate photo of yourself or even just talk? They want to know what's going to happen to them and if it has already happened, is it too late to report type of stuff.
So kids kind of react with this general, well, obvious curiosity about what this means for them and what their ramifications are, and sometimes with maybe at times inappropriate sense of humor. How do you guys kind of bring it back to, no, this is a serious thing?
Yeah. When I start talking about sexting and kind of talking about what it is and why it's important, the climate of the room really does change. Kids get very serious. The look on their face changes, partly because I think they've either thought about doing it, they know someone who's done it, or maybe even they've done it themselves, right? They've sent that topless or nude picture. So I really don't have a hard time getting them to focus and be serious. You know, sometimes there's the class clown who will say something, but it definitely doesn't derail what we're talking about. And I think it's because they've seen it, you know, they know what's going on. And I think a lot of times they just don't know, you know, that it's illegal, that if you send a picture, it's permanent, right? You can't get that back. And that if you put it on the internet, it's probably going to be up there for a very long time, if not forever. So I don't really deal too much with the inappropriate questions, but definitely a lot of, well, this is going on Facebook. I saw somebody do this on Instagram. What about this? We get a lot of those questions.
So let's start with how you approach a classroom. You know, how do you kind of set that tone? What are some of the first things you say?
So typically when I talk about sexting, it's under the topic of sexual harassment. So we talk about the forms of sexual harassment: physical, verbal, nonverbal, and written. And with written sexual harassment, that's where sexting comes in. We also talk about it in media safety, but then it's more, you know, kind of the primary thing. I always start out by asking kids what they know about sexting.
What do you find that they normally say?
They know what it is.
They know. Okay.
Yeah,
so
they
this
know.
Isn't, but so for people who may not know, what is sexting?
Yeah, it's sexual pictures or text that you send electronically. So text message, Facebook chat, you know, all those social media platforms that people are using.
So kids respond initially with this curiosity because they know what it is, but they may not know what the guidelines are and what's safe, what's not appropriate behavior. How do you kind of address that?
Yeah, I talk about the illegality of it, right? Any nude picture of anyone under the age of 18 is considered child pornography. It's a felony and it's a sex offense. And that's usually when kids kind of, you know, understand the seriousness of it. But, you know, that's not going to affect everybody, the fact that it's illegal. So then I talk about how it's permanent. Right. If you take a picture on your cell phone or with your computer, that image is going to remain on the hard drive. Right. And then also if you send it, you're not going to get it back. It's just always going to be out there. And, you know, some kids, that's what's really going to bring it home for them. Maybe there's still kids who who don't get it or don't think it's so serious. So then we talk about how you put it on the internet and it becomes public.
Officer Hazelton?
Yeah, when you do a combination of the legal ramifications as well as just getting kids to really stop and think, technology is moving faster and faster and faster every year. And sometimes this speed isn't allowing kids to really stop and think, what am I doing? This phone call, is it really that important that I take right now? This text, do I really, should I send it? And there's also some of that security because a majority of these sextings, they're not occurring in public. They're not taking nude photos of themselves while they're walking down the street. This is in the safety of their own home. And when you have all those walls and barriers of, oh, this is a safe place, I grew up here, they sometimes forget that the conversation that they're having may be inappropriate.
Yeah, how do youth use cell phones, say, differently than those of us who've come to use cell phones later on in life, at later ages?
Yeah, I think that it's just a part of their everyday social interactions. When I talk about written sexual harassment and I talk about notes and drawings, when I was in middle school, we sent notes like crazy, but kids look at me like, notes? What? Who sends notes? But when I talk about texting or Facebook chat or Instagram, they know exactly what I'm talking about. That's what really relates to them. And that's a lot of how they're communicating with their friends. That's become, really a part of their everyday life, to the point where kids carry them in their pockets, even when they're not supposed to have them in school. They'll have them in their shoes. They always have their cell phones on them. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen kids pull them out of their high tops or their boots. Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
I've actually seen two kids sitting right next to each other. Texting each other.
Well, and I've seen adults do that too.
Yeah.
I mean, verbal conversation ceased to exist. Let's just keep texting back and forth, where even though you're less than 2 inches apart.
Yeah, it's a different world. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming on KCUR.org. I'm Suzanne Hogan. We're talking about youth sexting, that is, those under the age of 18 who are engaging in sexually explicit text messages. Haley Harold, Education and Outreach Specialist for MOXA, and Officer Tom Hazelton, a school resource officer for the Shawnee Mission School District. How are you talking to your children about how they're using their telephones and sexual education? Give us a call, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or send us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We mentioned Snapchat earlier, and I'll admit that I don't really know what that is. Can you tell me what that is?
Yeah. It's an app for your cell phone. And it allows you to take pictures and then edit that picture, putting text on it. And then when you send it, you put a time limit on it. So the person who receives it can see it for 10 seconds, 30 seconds, however long you want them to see it. And then it will disappear and they won't have that image on their phone anymore. And it also warns you when somebody takes a screenshot of the picture that you sent them. I've seen it advertised as the safe way to sext.
Huh.
Yeah, so there's a conversation around, well, it disappears. You know if they take a screenshot. But really, just because it notifies you that they took a screenshot doesn't mean that you can get that picture back or there's anything that you can do to keep them from sending it to anybody. So, I don't think there's any safe way for kids to sext.
Officer Hazelton?
Well, even with that Snapchat, if I'm saying that correctly.
You got it.
Everything that is internet-based, it's going to have some sort of hard drive where the information is saved somewhere. So this illusion that it's deleted right away, I don't know if I'd want to, bet everything on that.
Mm-hmm. So nothing's really private here. I mean, anything could have a longer shelf life, essentially.
Every email, every text, everything that you send on anything that's a computer somewhere, it could be burned in a file somewhere on your computer or on a hard drive and saved permanently.
So how is sexting, say, different from flirting? Because
yeah.
Isn't there some – I mean, kids are engaging and they're getting to know themselves sexually and they're there's all this peer pressure and there are some ways to flirt with each other that's appropriate. There's a line. I mean, is there a way to do this appropriately?
I think that the difference between flirting and sexting, or why it's not a safe way to communicate or, you know, explore how you're feeling is because it's not a moment in time, right? When you flirt with somebody in person, it's a moment in time. That moment passes. But when you're doing it electronically, the moment doesn't pass, right? If it's a text message, that person has that text message on their phone. If it's a picture, they have it on their computer, whatever you sent it to. So I think that's, to me, that's the big difference, is that it's not a moment in time. It lasts a lot longer.
And I really don't know if this is considered flirting, because there's no personal contact back and forth. It's all just a phone, a computer to computer. And, you know, if that's the way communication is heading for our society, which it obviously is, then we still need to think about what we're doing.
And there's a different amount of kids who are actually sending sex versus those who are just receiving them without wanting that or saying in any way that they, you know, were seeking that information. And what's a kid to do if they receive a message from a classmate that is way over the line and is a sext?
Well, the key is they need to report that immediately. It's not for them to determine whether or not, hey, should I look out for my buddy on this one? Or you need to report that immediately. It allows us to intervene before it becomes a bigger issue. Two, it also gives us a great time to, you know, make it an educational piece. Mm-hmm. And three, you don't want to be the one that's stuck with something you shouldn't have had in the first place.
How do you go about reporting it?
Yeah, at Moxa, during our presentations, we tell, you know, we always get this question, well, what do I do? And I tell kids that bottom line, the very basic, you need to tell somebody that you got the picture before you delete it, an adult, right? Because, you know, what can happen is, you know, the person who sent it can be called into the principal's office and they can have to tell or, you know, hand over their phone. Somebody's going to find out that you received that picture. And if your parents don't know about it, or the principal doesn't know that you've reported it, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. They're going to assume that because you didn't tell anybody that you wanted to get it and maybe that you sent it on. So that's the basic. You know, don't delete it by yourself. Tell an adult. Delete it together. We always say, you know, and I really stress this, the right thing to do, the right thing, the thing everyone should be doing is reporting it so that that picture's not going around the school or around the community. And then we talk about how somebody's going to feel if there's a nude picture of them, you know, going around.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're going to take a call from Joe. Joe, good morning. You're on Central Standard.
Good morning. I'm a teacher, and I just want to say thanks for doing the show. I think it's a really important topic to be brought up to parents. And on the topic of parents, you stated earlier that technology is moving really, really fast. And do you guys have any resources for parents and even teachers to access, to kind of keep up with the apps like Snapchat kids are using, and some ways to kind of help not only protect their kid, but see if they're engaged in that kind of behavior and ways to keep them safe?
Joe, thanks for the call. Haley?
You can visit our website, moxa.org, and there's resources there for parents and teachers. Also, you can give us a call, and Moxa would love to come out to your school and do a presentation to your students, to your teachers. If you want to organize it for parents, that's something that we would be very happy to do.
You also might want to just think about whether or not your child actually needs a cell phone. Sometimes I've seen kids in third grade with a cell phone. I really don't see the purpose of that. So maybe just some old school parenting wouldn't hurt either. If you give your kid something, you need to know their access codes. You need to know where that phone is. You need to know who they're calling. I mean, you're paying the bill. You have every right to look at everything on that phone.
So you think parents should be checking what's being sent, what's being received? That's the best way to monitor it, or say just cut it off or set limitations?
Absolutely that as well. I mean, obviously, you go to Moxa and places that will help you with educating yourself on the internet and how to do it better. But that first step of, hey, does my kid even need a cell phone right now? That's a huge question you should ask yourself before you even head down the road.
So some kids are finding themselves in pretty sticky legal situations right now because of this being charged with felony charges. is this an appropriate level of a charge for a child that's engaging in some of this activity? I know there's different cases, but...
Well, when you look at the first part, you mentioned the charge, and that's something we talk about as a criminal aspect of it when we teach the class or when I assist Haley when she graciously allows me to come in there. And we still don't want that to be a fear of then I don't want to report it because I'm going to get in trouble. And that isn't the case. Just like everything, law has a human factor to it, and reporting it allows us to give us the opportunity to make decisions on whether or not charges should be filed. So when kids think about all the criminal aspects of it, if they are doing nothing, not telling anybody, then yeah, we can head down a slippery road real fast to where it becomes a felony because it's child pornography if it is a photo.
Do you know locally what where we stand on this issue in Kansas, Missouri?
Well, you're going to be looking at a case-by-case basis. I can't give you a definitive that, hey, this cut-and-paste issue right here is going to be a charge and this one here isn't.
And part of that's because it's this growing new thing.
Well, and it's not only a growing new thing, but juvenile law is intended to protect the juvenile and hopefully educate them to be a productive member of society. That's how come we have it separate from our regular adult criminal laws.
So what if two youth are engaging in consent? I mean, does that change anything here?
No.
No?
It's still illegal. It's still permanent. And if it's happening on the internet, even if it's an app like Instagram, they have servers, right, where that stuff is stored, then it's going to be public too. So it's not a thing where consent changes, you know, if it's a crime or not.
Do we know how the international community is dealing with this? I mean, America is not – the whole world is using cell phones. I mean, do we have any idea of how legislation that's being passed in other parts of the world or how people in other countries are dealing with this?
I don't know if I can give you a 100% answer on that because, you know, even from state to state, it varies on how it's going to be charged within our own country. You're asking me to give you an answer about how it's going to be handled globally. That's kind of a big question.
I was just wondering if there's maybe a story or an example.
I don't have an example of it being charged or anything, but I have heard from students who have sent a picture to somebody that they met online, someone that they didn't know, and the picture, the nude photo has ended up on a website in another country. And from what I've looked at and what I've tried to find out, you know, there's no way to get that picture down if it's on a website in another country. Our government has no jurisdiction, right, to force the owner of the site to take it down.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Advice on how to talk to a young person that you may know who would like to learn more about this. 816-235-2888. Is there... A really bad way to bring this up with a kid?
I don't think this is any different than having those other tough conversations.
Well, that's what I was wondering. When you have the talk, you know, is this kind of different from the talk or is it the same
thing? I think you include it in with the talk. I mean, when it comes to parenting, this topic is obviously going to be very sensitive. You're going to have a lot of questions involved behind it. But you got to have it. And if you don't know how to approach the subject, I'm going to have to refer to Haley. I mean, you go right to other resources to find out.
Well, and it helps Haley that you can maybe talk about this in a way that kids can understand and bring it down to their level. What do you find in your work?
Yeah, I think that it's really important that you have the talk early, right? The majority of third graders play interactive video games online. And by fifth grade, a lot of kids have cell phones. They have Facebook pages. They're doing things online. So if you're having the conversation with your seventh grader, it might be too late, depending on your child. You know, everybody's family is going to feel the need to talk about these things at different times. But you got to kind of be cognizant of what kind of social media and social interaction your kids are having online to decide when to have that talk. If you don't know, if you want help, if you need some support, you can call MOXA. You can call our crisis line and talk to somebody who will help you figure out, you know, kind of brainstorm some ideas of how you want to go about that conversation.
I want to talk specifically about young girls in this situation. They seem to have maybe deal with it in a different way within their peer groups, kind of dealing with this double standard that's put upon them. Can you talk about how you're seeing that in these groups with children that you're speaking with?
Yeah. What I'm seeing is not that somebody decides, oh, I have this great idea. I'm going to send this topless picture to someone and everybody's going to think it's, you know, it's really cool or it's sexy. What I'm seeing more and what I'm hearing more from kids is that somebody pressured them to do it. So maybe a boy they like, you know, said, I'll go out with you if you send me this picture. Maybe they said, if you really love me, if you really care about me, if you want to go to the dance with me, if you don't want me to break up with you, then you'll send this picture. Another thing that's, you know, to me, it's even scarier is that, you know, they're talking to somebody they know or they're talking to somebody they don't know online. And that person has a secret about them, maybe that they've shared, and they say something like, if you don't send me this picture, I'm gonna send this text message to all your friends. I'm gonna post this on my timeline, something like that. And then kids really feel like, you know, do I have a choice? You know, both things are, you know, things I don't want to happen. So I think that that's why it's affecting, you know, young people. It's illegal, right? It's permanent, it's public, but also it's an added stress when it comes from pressure, right? Mm-hmm. When it's not something you felt like you had a choice in whether or not you were doing, you felt pressured.
And there's a lot of peer pressure and gossip and clicks and a lot of things going on during this age. What are you hearing from young girls who have experienced this peer pressure?
Yeah, I've been in presentations when we talk about this and, you know, someone just kind of glosses over and checks out, or someone starts crying, or someone acts like they, you know, want to leave the room. And it makes me wonder, you know, have they experienced this? From my experience, I think when kids do this, they feel a lot of guilt, right? Especially if it comes from pressure. They didn't feel like they had a choice. They feel like they don't have any allies, right? Maybe people are calling them names because they did this. You know, maybe they sent it to someone they trusted and they didn't expect them to send it to anybody. So from my experience, I have seen that, you know, kids kind of feel like they're on an island, just like they would if they were being bullied or sexually harassed.
Yeah, and how is this being looked at in forms of anti-bullying campaigns within schools using social media and, you know, in text messaging?
Well, they are definitely taking a hard stance on this because the sexting and bullying, cyberbullying, it's such a closely related relationship that they usually are happening together, or they're obviously separate. But a majority of the bullying can lead to sexting where, hey, I know something about you. You need to do this. As far as an education stance on it, if it's something that's happened directly on the school grounds or at the school, then obviously they're going to be taking steps. If they receive information about it, they obviously get a hold of the authorities. Bullying is something we definitely don't tolerate. And if bullying and sexting are happening all at the same time, we're going to investigate that further as well.
We're going to hear from Brooke in Overland Park. Brooke, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you for having me. I have a 13-year-old daughter myself. And I have been struggling with keeping up on monitoring all of the apps and text messages and Instagram posts and all of that also. It just seems like the technology evolves quicker than I can grasp it. And you mentioned Snapchat, which she does do Snapchat with her friends. And we have had the discussion about what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. And I appreciate your comments about telling them what to do if they see something that is not appropriate, as far as a picture being sent to them. And I'm going to have to discuss that with her because I had been kind of the just delete it and move on and don't correspond with that person anymore. And now I'm going to have to change my stance on that. But I just say that it's very hard when we didn't grow up doing this. I mean, I've tried to explain to my daughter, you know, we had a phone, it was in the kitchen. We sat there, you know, or went around the corner. My mom heard everything I said, you know, and so did my brother and my dad. And they knew, you know, if I was talking about somebody at school and I'd be off the phone and my mom would say, you know, that wasn't kind. you know, you don't understand what's going on with her. And now it's hard for us because, I mean, my daughter doesn't even use her phone to call anyone.
Hmm. What does she use it for then?
Texting.
Just texting.
You know, nobody calls. You know, she'll say, oh, I'm bored. And I'll say, call a friend. Mom, nobody calls their friends anymore. Like, well, then text someone and ask them to come over. So it's very hard to keep track of what they're doing, who they're doing it with, especially, you know, as they move into middle school and they're meeting friends that are new to them and, you know, new to our family. They're not people she's been playing with since kindergarten. And it's hard to try to determine. And if you determine all of that by text, you know, by reading that person's text, they go, you know, back and forth, it sometimes puts you in a, you know, in a rough spot of determining who your children are playing with and who they aren't.
Brooke, thank you for the wonderful call.
And I wanted to mention one other thing. There is a new app that my daughter has started to use. I don't even know if it's an app. It's called Ask.fm. And it's like a page where it's about, like, that people can ask them questions anonymously. And so there's questions out there, very innocent questions, like, what's your favorite Bible verse? What's your favorite meal? Who's your best friend? And then there's other questions like, why do you hate so-and-so so much? Why are you mean to this person? Why do you like this jerk?
So it's a pretty wide range of questions.
Right. And it's hard to remind your, you know, teenager that, you know, you don't have to answer everything that's put out there. So it's just one page that is like, you know, it's like ask.fm and then your daughter's name or whatever. And then they can go to other people's pages and ask them questions.
Hmm. Well, Brooke, thank you so much. Officer Hazelton, you had something to say.
I want to comment on that Brooke said. She actually brought up something that you can remove some physical barriers. And she had talked about even when she was growing up, hey, I'm talking on the phone in the kitchen or where family can see me. Let's put our computers there. That's the first step. I know it's going to be hard to keep track of all the new technology, but if we remove some of the physical barriers and your kid isn't online in a secret room or in their own room, it's in a public place in the house, you're a step ahead because most times people aren't going to do anything inappropriate, or if they do view it, you may be right there to see it.
Do you have other forms of advice for kind of more the later teens where there's that more resistance to what parents are saying and parents want to stay involved and there's kind of that, you know, natural want to be your own person? I mean, that can be pretty hard to...
I don't know if anyone has ever solved that problem.
Yeah.
That's been around for years.
Good point. Well, so then I'm wondering, what is the legal responsibility of a parent or a school official if they know that a kid is engaging in this but they don't report it? Or they know that something's going on but they don't step up and say something. Is there an accountability or responsibility on the adult in that situation?
Yeah, absolutely, especially if you're a mandatory reporter. And all school officials are mandatory reporters. So they can look at possible civil ramifications as well as criminal charging.
Do you know of any kinds of technology that are out there for parents to learn more about this issue? You hear about apps that kids are using. Are there apps for parents?
Well,
in monitoring this?
There are some. I'm sure Moxa is going to have more information on that as well. But you can buy programs that shadow every keystroke on your computer. And it can it's not visible except to the person who installs it. And then they can look at all the history on that computer. And it's something that anybody can purchase. If you're at that level of fear and you think that that's what you need, then you should go in that direction. And, of course, more information on how to track some of these things. You know, look at Mox's website. Look at any sort of, outreach program for kids. And I'm sure they're going to have some sort of information for you.
Haley, how long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing this since last July. So not too incredibly long. But I think something that's helped me, whether I use them or not, I have those apps on my phone so that I know what they are. I know how they work. And, you know, if I see something, I don't have any kids this age, but if I saw something on my child's phone, maybe I'd be able to recognize it a little better if I'm using that technology too. But I think that something that helps a lot is just being curious and being interested and having this conversation with your kids, even if they're reluctant, just letting them know, you know, the facts, some of the things we've talked about today, and then helping them to make good decisions for themselves.
I want to thank Haley Harold, Education and Outreach Specialist for MOXA, Metropolitan Organization to Counter Sexual Assault. We'll have a link to their website and all their resources on our website at kcur.org. And Officer Tom Hazelton, School Resource Officer for the Shawnee Mission School District. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Just ahead, a look inside your chimney. We'll hear from a local chimney sweep who is on her way to Branson right now, along with 700 other sweeps from across the country. Stay with us. Central Standard returns in just a moment.